Good deal. Okay. Good deal. I want to welcome the new people. See a lot of new faces, some I haven't seen for a while. We have three meetings where we study the big book. We have a website for those who are new and want to learn the book, experiencethebigbook.org. If you come up to me after the meeting, I'll show you how to get it on the internet. We have, I think, 200 episodes and 80 thoughts. We've covered the book. And I encourage you, if you're new, to study the book and to learn the information in it and then do it. I don't know of any other way to recover. This is what AA is. AA is this book. It's called Alcoholics Anonymous. This has the specific directions on recovery. And they tell us tonight that if you follow this path, you won't fail. We have three meetings. We have one Saturday morning at 9:15. We just finished our 10th year, so we're starting our 11th year of these meetings. Done about, 1,300 of them. And this Saturday, we're going to do something special. We're at the part of the book where we're reading the third step prayer. We're going to look and see exactly what it says and what it means, and then we're going to go right into this step four. So if you're new and you're interested in learning how to do the steps from the book, join us on Saturday at 9:15. On Sunday, we're at a different part of the book. We finished the first 102 pages, which have the directions on recovery, and we're reading to wives. You might say, well, I'm new and I'm not a wife, or I am or not. To wives is really, it should be called to alcoholics. It's all about our disease, how we look, what the problem is, how we see ourselves and others see us. It's got great information. So join us on Sunday night at 6 o'clock. Tonight we are on, we started the book over. I can't remember whether we're on the 10th or 11th time in the big book, and we're on Bill's story. And what we've learned so far from going through the book is we learned that this book was written in 1939 to people who have a hopeless condition of mind and body. Anybody here have a hopeless condition of mind and body? Now they say seemingly hopeless. So when this book was written, there was no hope for me. There was no hope for anyone. There was no AA. And it says, we have written this book to show precisely how we have recovered. So this book is a testimony on how you can recover from a hopeless condition of mind and body. So if you're new and you're struggling and things seem pretty bad at this point, we've all been there. This book is written for you. We read Doctor's Opinion, which is the first chapter. It's in Roman numerals. I don't know why they changed that, but the doctor's opinion tells us what's wrong with me. I know what's wrong with me from reading this. I don't know if it applies to you, but what it told me is that if I put alcohol in my body, I cannot control how much I drink. Anybody have that problem? And it cannot be fixed. There's nothing I can do that will change that. If I put alcohol in my body, I don't know what it's going to happen, but it's not going to be good. Anybody understand that? All right. Everybody has that problem, right? Everybody raise your hand. Good. So if you have that problem, your solution is very simple. Don't drink. Why would anybody drink when you can't control how much you drink? But we have a second problem. Our mind is damaged, and our mind seeks the ease and comfort of alcohol to change the way we feel and we see the world. Anybody relate to that? Now, we know we can't control how much we drink. So why would we put the alcohol in our body? Because right before we take that first drink, we can't see what it's going to do to us, only for us. People start feeling better on the way to the liquor store. People start feeling better when they're giving them the money. They got the bottle or they got the drug. They're already better. Why? Because their mind's telling them that there's going to be relief. And when you have that, you cannot say no to it. You cannot say rationally, I'm not going to drink. You cannot do it if you're a real alcoholic. And that's why we keep drinking and then we quit and we tell we're going to stop and we're never going to drink again. We do it again. We do it over and over. Now, everybody is in this room has had a gift. They've had a moment when they said, I need help. I need to go to AA. Now, this book is written for you. AA is great. The meetings are great. The fellowship is great. But the fellowship isn't the solution. The fellowship is to bring you to the solution, which is the 12 steps. The solution is to find a power that'll tell you bad idea when you're handing money over in the liquor store. And that's the only person that can do that is God. I can't do it for you. You can't do it for yourself, but God can do it for you. The 12 steps are how we develop a relationship with God so that he has that power in our lives. Does this make sense? And so now we're going to read Bill's story. I was thinking today, I don't know how many meetings I've done on this, 40, 50. But most people don't read Bill's story. Most people go to meetings or they go to treatment centers. They never read the story. And this story was written in 1937, late 37. It was the first thing written. He wrote this story when they decided to do the book. They decided to do the book because they had 45 to 50 people sober. And they decided to write a book. Now, there are that many people in the room tonight. But the people who were sober, they were hopeless. And they realized that they had found something that worked. And we know it works because we're here today. How many copies of the big book have been written? What, 25 million? How many people have recovered? 2.5 million people. And so Bill wrote this story. He was one of the founders, Bill W. And this story is his testimony, and it's also a message of hope. Because you notice the book doesn't start with the steps. The steps are on page 58. Alcoholics need to know what's wrong with them, and they need to accept their complete defeat, and they have to believe that there's hope before they're going to take any action. And this is a story of hope. It's a story of salvation. It's very powerful. And really, this story is the beginning of hope for all of us when it was written. And it starts, and it's called Bill's Story. It's a story. Now, this is how Bill saw it when he wrote the book. He might have seen it differently 30 years later, right? But it's his story of how he saw himself, what he did, and how he recovered. Now, the power of Bill's story is that in 1971, he died sober. And when he wrote this in 1937, when you read it, you'll see he was dying. And something happened to him and changed him. And then he went and he met Dr. Bob in Akron. And then Dr. Bob sobered up and they met AA number 3, and we're here today. It's the hand of God. And we're going to see some of that tonight. So I usually break it down when I go through this into four parts. We're going to do 4 or 5 pages tonight. And then the second part is, this is where we see Bill starting his alcoholism, the way he thought, the way he drank. Then the second part is where Bill's completely defeated and dying. Then the third part is where Ebbie Thatcher comes to see him and tells him about the Oxford group, and the fourth part is where Bill takes the steps and he's changed. And so if you look at it in that regard, it's very powerful. It starts off, war fever ran high, and the New England town to which we new young officers from Plattsburgh were assigned. Jimmy's not here, but I think it's page 1, right? Page 1. Well, he's always asking which page. We were flattered. So he starts his story in New England. He was from Vermont. And this is World War I, 1917. And we were flattered when the first citizens took us to their homes, making us feel heroic. Now, the key thing about this story is to see how Bill thinks and feels, and see if you felt that way. He felt heroic because he's being accepted. He's being respected. He's an officer. And he says, here was love, applause, war, moments sublime with intervals hilarious. I was part of life at last. I don't know about you, but my alcoholism started way before I took the first drink. I didn't feel part of everything. I felt separated from. My separation was really from God. I didn't learn that till I worked the steps. But I couldn't feel really part of things. I always felt uneasy. Always had fear of not being good enough. Anybody else have that? So here Bill's starting to feel good. He's getting love, applause, war. He's part of life at last. Now, where was he before he was part of life? I mean, where was he? He was still Bill, right? But he feels part of something because something's changed. He's getting respect. He's getting, people are accepting him. He's feeling part of a group. And that's the power of the AA fellowship, because if you come here, you can feel part of a group of people who have the same problem. We hope everybody feels welcome here tonight. We have a solution to your problem. And it says, in the midst of all this excitement, he discovered liquor. Bad idea, Bill. He forgot the strong warnings and the prejudices of his people concerning drink. He was raised by his grandfather. His grandfather felt that alcohol was evil and nobody should drink. In time, we sailed for Over There. Over There was a song in World War I where the Americans went over to France and they fought the Germans in 1917 and 18. He says, I was very lonely and I again turned to alcohol. Anybody relate to that? Now notice he turned to alcohol. He was in the world, but he didn't like what he saw. So he turned away from that to alcohol. And he was lonely, so he needed something to change the way he felt. Anybody relate to that? See, that's alcoholism. So alcohol had power because he knew whenever he didn't feel good or he was lonely, he could turn to alcohol. We landed in England. He visited Winchester Cathedral. Much moved, I wandered outside. My attention was caught by a doggerel and an old tombstone. Here lies a Hampshire grenadier who caught his death drinking cold small beer. A good soldier is near forgot whether he dieth by musket or by pot. This isn't marijuana, by the way. But pot isn't in the big book, in case you're interested. But he died of alcoholism. Ominous warning, which I failed to heed. So he's 22. Listen to this. A veteran of foreign wars, I went home at last. I fancied myself a leader. He wanted to be a leader. He wanted to be respected. We all have self-esteem issues, alcoholics. And we try to build self-esteem, but we build it in negative ways. And he wanted to have positive self-esteem, and he said, had not the men of my battery given me a special token of appreciation, my talent for leadership, I imagine. So he's seeing himself as he wants to be a leader. He wants to be respected. He wants to be feel good about himself based on what other people think of him. We call that codependence. So Bill couldn't just be happy being Bill. He had to be the leader. He had to be someone. And I think all alcoholics are like that. And he's going to be placed at the head of vast enterprises, and he's going to manage them with utmost assurance. So I wrote a vision for Bill to give him self-esteem, make him feel okay, how he would be seen by others. Now, it says in the big book, and we read it, that we were under the delusion that we could wrest satisfaction and happiness out of life if we managed well. It says that on page 62 when they tell us what's wrong with us. It's a delusion that if I could manage the world and everything would go the way I wanted, I would be happy. Anybody else have that? The problem is it never works. It never lasts. And so when I try to manage the world so I can be happy, it just keeps getting worse. I get more conflict, things don't go my way, we get angry, we get fearful. So here's where Bill, he's starting his life, he's gonna take a night law course and attain employment as an investigator for a surety company. Now here's one of the most important lines in the whole big book. The drive for success was on. I'd proved to the world I was important. I think that should be, every alcoholic should have that tattooed on their chest. And we want to be a success. We want to prove we're important. And what makes you a success? Ask yourself that. See, Bill was only going to be a success if people thought he was a successful. So he was worshiping other things. He was worshiping prestige, things, honor, respect. He wasn't worshiping, loving, and serving God and others, was he? he was worshiping how people would feel about him. Now, once you do that, what becomes your higher power? Whatever he thought was going to make him successful governed his life. So already, see, he wasn't running his life. The things he wanted to be successful were running his life. And when he did that, it didn't work. And you're going to see how alcohol became more and more important in his life. He went to Wall Street, little by little became interested in the market. Many people lost money, but some become very rich. Why not I? I studied economics and business as well as law. Potential alcoholic that I was, we could talk what makes you a potential alcoholic or not. I nearly failed my law course. At one of the finals, I was too drunk to think or write. That's probably a sign of alcoholism, don't you think? You have an important exam and you're too drunk to take it. And this is a great, he says, my drinking was not yet continuous, but it disturbed his wife. Anybody have people disturbed by your drinking or using? Mm-hmm. We had long, I love this, this is complete bullshit. He says, we had long talks when I would still her forebodings by telling her that men of genius conceive their best projects when drunk. I mean, he was a real bullshitter. That the most majestic constructions of philosophic thought were so derived. And you know, here's the thing. He probably believed that. If he took a lie detector test, he would actually believe that. So it says, by the time I had completed the course, I knew the law was not for me. The inviting maelstrom, which is it's a whirlpool, a tumult, tumult of Wall Street, had me in its grip. Now, this is in the early 1920s. People were making a lot of money in the stock market. I'll talk a little bit about how that worked a little later. It's different than it is today. Business and financial leaders were my heroes. So who are your heroes? Who are your heroes today? Think about it. Who are the people that you respect? His heroes were the people who were leaders and had a lot of money. Out of this alloy, an alloy is a combination of two elements, of drink and speculation, so he could be a leader. So he put that together. He forged a weapon that would one day turn its flight like a boomerang and all but cut him to ribbons. So he threw the boomerang, which was his drive for success, and then using alcohol, and it came back and it defeated him. He says, living modestly, my wife and I saved $1,000, which was a lot of money in those days. I think the minimum wage was 10 cents, 20 cents. It went into certain securities, then cheap and rather unpopular. I rightly imagined they would someday have a great rise. I failed to persuade my broker friends to send me out looking over factories and managements, but my wife and I decided to go anyway. He had developed a theory that most people lost money in stocks through ignorance of markets. I discovered many reasons later on. I wrote greed. Now, this is a time when there was no internet. People didn't even have phones in their houses. And he was going to go around to these companies in the East Coast and find out what they were producing, what they were doing, so he could make recommendations on whether people should invest in those companies. It was a really good idea. Bill was a smart guy. So they got off in their motorcycle and they drove all over. He says, our friends thought a lunacy commission on page 3 should be appointed. Perhaps they were right. He had some success at speculation, so we had a little money. But we once worked on a farm for a month to avoid drawing on our small capital. That was the last honest manual labor on my part for many a day. We covered the whole eastern United States in a year. And then in the end, he went to Wall Street. They gave him a position, a large expense account. So Bill's starting to make it, right? He's starting to get what he wanted. The exercise of an option brought in more money, leaving us with a profit of several thousand dollars for that year. And here it is. For the next few years, fortune threw money and applause my way. Things are going really well, right? He's making money. Everybody respects him. He had arrived. Now he had arrived. This is what he wanted to do. He should have been happy, right? Look what happened. My judgment and ideas were followed by many to the tune of paper of millions. The great boom of the late 20s was seething and swelling. That was called the
Roaring
20s. There you go. Drink, but here it is. He has all this other stuff, but drink is taking an important and exhilarating part in his life. He still needs alcohol to feel okay. This other stuff was not enough. He says, my drinking assumed more serious proportions, continuing all day and almost every night. Now, that's not normal, is it? Right. And the remonstrances of my friends terminated in a row, and I became a lone wolf. Remonstrances is a legal term. It means earnest presentation of reasons in opposition to something. So they were telling him, Bill, you shouldn't drink. He writes, there were many unhappy scenes in our sumptuous apartment. There had been no real infidelity. Now, I don't know if this is a true statement. For loyalty to my wife, helped at times by extreme drunkenness, kept me out of those scrapes. So we don't have Lois's story here. We just have Bill's. In 1929, I contracted golf fever. And this is in the summer. He went at once to the country. He wanted to be like Walter Hagen, who was a favorite, famous golfer. Liquor caught up with me much faster than I came up behind Walter. So here he's making money. He's on Wall Street. He's considered successful, but he's starting to get jittery in the morning. But golf permitted drinking every day and every night. It was fun to caroom around the exclusive course, which inspired such awe in me as a lad. So he felt really, he's a big shot now. And he's made it. He inquired the impeccable coat of tan one sees upon the well-to-do. The local banker watched me whirl fat checks in and out of his till with amused skepticism. And then now, abruptly, in October 1929, hell broke loose in the New York Stock Exchange. I think it was October 29th, 1929. What happened was you could buy stock without having any money. Great idea, right? Well, what happened is if you gave $30 and you bought a GE for $30, you gave $30. You could use the GE stock that was worth $30 to buy another stock that was worth $30. So this was called margin. So people were playing the market and having all these stocks, and it was worth a lot of money as long as it was going up. Now, there wasn't money behind it. So one day, things didn't go well, and the stocks fell, and you had to pay the money. So you had to sell your other stock. You had to sell your GE to pay for your Apple, and then your Apple to pay, and there was no money. And so people lost everything in one day. Now, the other problem was that was we had banks, and people would put money in the bank. Banks are a good place, right? Safe. They weren't safe in those days because they didn't have the money that you put in. So people ran to the banks to get their money, and the bank ran out of money. Now, we have this FDIC. You see that? Federally insured. It's up to $100,000. The banks guaranteed that they have your money, and you can get it. They didn't have that in those days. So there was a run on the banks, so everybody lost money in the stock market, and then people who had their money in the banks, they lost all their money. And then there was no work. And so the country was really in bad shape. And he talks about the sticker was 32, it had been 52. He was finished, and so were many friends. So, you know, alcoholics have had bad days, right? This was a bad day for Bill, right? The papers reported men jumping to death from the towers of high finance. That disgusted Bill. He wasn't going to jump. He went back to the bar. That was his solution. Can anybody relate to that? It's a bad day. Screw it. Let's go get a drink. My friends had dropped several million since 10 o'clock, so what? Tomorrow was another day. See how well written this is? As I drank, the old fierce determination to win came back. See, alcohol changed the way he felt. It gave him that drive. He was gonna show him, right? So next morning, he went to Montreal. He had a friend there. He had some money. He felt like Napoleon returning from Elba. No St. Helena for me. St. Helena was where Napoleon didn't come back from there. But drinking caught up with me again, and my generous friend had to let me go. This time we stayed broke. So he's broke. It's 12 years since the war. He's wanted to be a success. He was a lawyer. He was at Wall Street. He had millions of dollars. He's got nothing. He's living with his wife's parents. He found the job, but he lost it as a result of a brawl with a taxi driver. Any relate to that? Mercifully, no one could guess that I was to have no real employment for 5 years. I don't know that he ever really had a job again. He worked for AA. He worked for us. He was able to, people gave him money to help him live. His wife began to work in the department store, so she's working and he's drinking all day. I became an unwelcome hanger-oner at brokerage places. Now, Bill's, things are going bad for Bill. And can you see how his alcoholic thinking led him to make all these decisions? When we do our four step, we see that we made decisions based on self, which puts us in a position to be harmed. Bill put himself where he was. It was nobody else's fault. He made mistakes, he made decisions. And it says, liquor ceased to be a luxury and became a necessity. Anybody relate to that? That's when we cross that line. All alcoholics cross that line, usually while you're drunk, when liquor becomes a necessity. We can't live without the alcohol or the drugs. Anybody relate to that? And it still, it doesn't work. See, alcohol doesn't fix it, but we can't stop drinking. That's a bad situation. Bathtub gin, two bottles a day and often three, got to be a routine. He said he had some job, but he began to wake up early in the morning shaking violently. He's starting to die from his alcoholism. A tumbler full of gin followed by half a dozen bottles of beers would be required if I were to eat any breakfast. Now remember, a lot of this was during Prohibition. But you could get this bathtub gin, and he had a lot of it. Nevertheless, I still thought, now here's the key. He's living in with his parents, wife's parents. He's drinking every day. He's shaking in the morning. His wife's working. He's lost everything. Now listen to this. I still thought I could control the situation. This is why alcoholics die. They can't see that their life is unmanageable. He still thought he could control it, and there were periods of sobriety which renewed my wife's hope. Gradually, things got worse. They usually do, don't they? The house was taken over by the mortgage holder. My mother-in-law died. My wife and father-in-law became ill. His wife also had a miscarriage during this time. He said, then I got a promising business opportunity. Stocks were at a low point in 1932. And I'd somehow formed a group to buy. So he's trying to get his act together. It's 3 years later. Think what's happened. I mean, he's been drinking for 3 years, not working. He was to share in the projects. And then what? He went on a prodigious bender right before that. Anybody relate to that? And that chance, and he woke up. I said, this had to be stopped. Anybody do that? Has to be stopped. And I believe him. I saw I could not take so much as one drink. Now you remember, he didn't have this book. He didn't know what was wrong with him. He knew he couldn't control how much he drank, right? But he didn't really understand why he couldn't keep from drinking. And we're going to see where he learns that in the next few pages. We'll do that next week. I could see I could not take so much as one drink. He was through forever. He had written a lot of promises. But my wife happily observed that this time I meant business, and so did I. And they still have the Bible, where he wrote in the Bible and he dated it, where he was never going to drink again. And he swore in the Bible, and Lois was really happy. She was really convinced Bill's going to do it. So here's what the solemn oath does. Shortly afterwards, I came home drunk. There had been no fight. Where had been my high resolve? I simply didn't know. You see, he's beginning to understand the insanity that he could not keep from taking the first drink. It hadn't even come to mind. Someone had pushed a drink my way and I'd taken it. Was I crazy? I began to wonder, for such an appalling lack of perspective seemed near being just that. He renewed his resolve, so he's going to try harder. Anybody try willpower? Mm-hmm. Anybody? Right, we're going to try harder. I tried again, but you see, he doesn't have the power. Some time passed and confidence began to be replaced by cocksuredness. I could laugh at the gin mills. Now I had what it takes. See, sorry, he's beginning to relapse now. You see it? He thinks he's got the problem solved. He's got it controlled. One day I walked in the cafe to telephone. In no time I was beating in the bar asking myself how it happened. As the whiskey rose to my head, I told myself I would manage better next time. See, that's his disease. He's managing. He's going to fix this. Bill's going to manage better. I managed myself better into a wristband. Anybody else do that? But I might as well get good and drunk than I did. Here is, we'll just, We'll just finish with this last paragraph. The remorse, horror, and hopelessness of the next morning are unforgettable. Do you think Bill's a serious alcoholic? You think he's really got the disease, right? He's dying. The courage to do battle, he couldn't do the battle anymore. He knew he couldn't win. My brain raced uncontrollably. There was a terrible sense of impending calamity. Anybody have a lot of fear when they came in here? Probably some people new now have a lot of fear. I had a lot of fear. It was the water I swam in. I hardly dared cross the street lest I collapse and be run down. All night, my writhing nerves were stilled at last. The morning paper told me the market had gone to hell again, but well, so had I. The market would recover, but I wouldn't. See, he's starting to see the hopelessness of his condition. That was the hard thought. Should I kill myself? No, not now. Then a fog settled down. Gin would fix that. So two bottles and oblivion. So what did gin fix? It fixed the way he saw the world momentarily. So he couldn't live sober. His life's a mess. So he would drink, but it didn't fix it. And then he says he went on for two more years. So we'll pick up with this next week, and we'll see where Bill hits complete defeat. So I hope this was helpful. Every time I read it, I can see myself the way I thought. And you see, Bill's dying, and he doesn't have any hope. And this is 1932. But yet, he made it. So if you're new, take your book and take page 7 and go up to page 88. Now I want to show you how this is. Now I want you to hold your book. Everybody hold your book like this. Can everybody pick your book up? All right. If you do everything from page 7 to page 88, you'll never drink again. This is all, it's all right here in this book. And that's why we teach it and we study it. So I hope that was helpful. We'll open it up.